Stay safe on the roads with Rain-X Vision Beam Wiper Blades. Now at Menards. For over 40 years, Rain-X has provided drivers with products to outsmart the elements. Their Vision Beam Wiper Blades are easy to install and are designed to provide a smooth, streak-free wipe every time. Save big money on all Rain-X products now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome. So you've brought us a really fascinating stack of sources today, all centered around this figure historians supposedly don't want you to know about.
Right. Jed Redbeard Zeppelin, a 19th century pirate.
And looking through these notes, it's quite a story. It leaps really from something that sounds almost like history straight into, well, spectacular fiction.
Often in the same sentence, yeah. They look like handwritten notebook entries mostly. Mm-hmm. And they read like this blend, this sort of thrilling mix of maritime history and just pure folklore.
So that's what we're diving into today, right? Trying to pull those threads apart.
Exactly. Our mission is pretty clear.
Yeah.
Dive deep into these accounts and, you know, rigorously separate the legend from the actual historical record. We need to be like detectives here.
Looking for clues.
Yeah, specifically looking for anachronisms. Yeah. Those little details, or sometimes big details, that just cannot be true based on what we know about dates, technology, historical figures.
Because those impossible bits, they're the markers. They tell us where the story got, well, stretched.
Precisely. They're the strongest evidence that the tale was inflated, probably long after the supposed events. These impossibilities are like fingerprints of the myth-making process.
Okay. Yeah, because looking at these notebook entries, you see these unbelievable physical claims, impossible dates, and then it ends with this really chilling encounter deep underwater decades after he supposedly died.
It's a classic pattern, isn't it? How legends grow over time, especially sea legends. The ocean's a great place to hide impossibility.
And they borrow, right? Pieces from older stories, famous myths.
Oh, absolutely. To create something new, something bigger, and frankly, impossible. It seems like this narrative just skips the messy bits of history and goes straight for the spectacle.
What really stands out, even at first glance, is how these sources put these incredible, world-changing claims right next to, well, mistakes. Verifiable historical errors.
Errors that, you know, anyone with a decent grasp of 19th century history or even just basic calendar knowledge would spot pretty quickly.
So we're going to connect the dots between, say, the claim he sank hundreds of ships.
Which would have been a global catastrophe.
And the fact that the timeline they give for him just doesn't work at all.
Right. If a figure like this, operating on the scale described, was real, the entire history of the 19th century, global trade, naval power, it would all look completely different.
And the records just don't show that kind of massive disruption.
Not even close.
Yeah.
It strongly suggests fiction.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Starting with the man himself, Jed Redbeard Zeppelin, the sources place him ruling the Caribbean, the high seas, sometime in the 1800s.
Right. The 19th century.
And immediately, the physical description. That's the first thing that jumps out as, well, larger than life. The report states he stood 6'12" tall.
6'12".
Yeah.
And what's fascinating there isn't just the height itself, which is, you know, 7 feet tall. That's highly unusual for the era.
Very unusual. Average height, especially for sailors back then, was much shorter, wasn't it?
Generally, yes. Nutrition, hard living conditions, 7 feet would have made him a giant, a genuine colossus walking the deck.
But it's the way it's stated. 6'12", not just 7 feet.
Exactly. That's the tale. It's a classic tall tale inflation technique. It's like the storyteller's nudging you, saying, he's so tall, I can't even round it up properly.
It's deliberate. It avoids the nice, clean 7 feet and gives you this awkward measurement that makes him sound, well, not just tall, but unnaturally, almost freakishly large, like a monster.
It sets the tone immediately. This isn't just some pirate captain. This is a figure of immense presence designed to inspire terror. The sources even claim, you know, his own crew are scared of him.
They mention building custom bunks, reinforced stairs, just to handle his size.
Right. Those details add to the myth. It's hyper-exaggeration, a real hallmark of folklore, especially maritime folklore.
You don't just say ship is fast, you say it outruns the wind.
Exactly. And you don't just say a pirate is tall, you give him this unsettling, impossible-sounding measurement. It's that attempt at pseudo-precision, the 6'12", that gives it this weird air of authenticity while being completely fantastical.
I know the exact dimension and it's absurd.
Precisely. It's meant to inspire awe and maybe a bit of a shiver.
And from that physical size, the claims just escalate, don't they? Body count, operational scale.
Oh, dramatically.
Yeah.
The notebooks claim Redbeard sunk over 300 ships during his career.
300? That's not just piracy. That's industrial scale destruction. It seems far beyond what even the most successful real pirates achieved.
Way beyond. You think of someone like Bartholomew Roberts, maybe the most successful of the Golden Age pirates. He captured around 400 ships, but mostly captured and raided, not sunk. Sinking takes time, resources. It's a different strategy entirely.
And doing that in the 1800s, when naval powers were much stronger, actively suppressing piracy.
That's the other thing. The 19th century wasn't the golden age of piracy. You had powerful navies like the Royal Navy, the U.S. Navy, patrolling trade routes. Piracy was declining, becoming much harder.
So to sink 300 ships then, you'd need an impossible level of logistics. Constant ammunition resupply, repairs, somehow avoiding massive naval task forces sent to hunt you down.
The operational tempo required for that, for a single ship or small fleet. It's just unbelievable for that period. It's simply not feasible.
It feels like a number chosen purely for effect, for maximum terror. If they had said maybe 30 ships.
We might be talking about a particularly nasty but perhaps historically plausible raider. But 300, that's a symbolic number. It signifies ultimate evil, an insurmountable force.
And think about the global impact. If someone was sinking ships at that rate,
the effect on global trade would be catastrophic.
Yeah.
Marine insurance rates would go through the roof. International commerce, especially in the Atlantic or Caribbean, would grind to a halt or become incredibly dangerous.
You'd expect huge international reactions, right? Massive naval campaigns launched by multiple countries solely focused on stopping this one pirate.
Absolutely. Years-long campaigns. It would be the defining maritime crisis of the decade.
But there's nothing. No reliable contemporary records of this massive threat.
Nothing on that scale. Which tells us the 300 ships figure is almost certainly symbolic. It represents his alleged dominance, not a quantifiable reality. It's part of the legend building.
It makes him the ultimate pirate bogeyman, the biggest, the baddest. And to cement that status,
he needs to take down the other legends.
Which brings us squarely to the timeline problems. This is where the whole story just collides with known history, doesn't it?
Violently, yes. It completely runs aground. The sources claim that Redbeard, our 19th century pirate, personally killed the infamous Blackbeard. After a long, dramatic duel, apparently.
Okay, wait. Blackbeard, Edward Teach, he died. When was it? Early 18th century?
November 1718. Famously killed in battle off North Carolina by Lieutenant Maynard and his crew, acting under the governor of Virginia.
1718. And Redbeard is supposed to be active in the 1800s.
Right. There's a gap of, what, nearly 100 years, maybe more, depending on when in the 1800s Redbeard was supposedly operating.
So a duel between them is?
Utterly impossible. Chronologically impossible. It simply cannot have happened.
That's not just a minor error. That's a massive anachronism, a huge red flag, like you said.
It's probably the clearest indicator that this story is a deliberate mashup of different pirate legends. It's what we sometimes call narrative economy.
Narrative economy, meaning?
Meaning the storyteller takes a shortcut. Instead of building Redbeard's fearsome reputation through lots of original, though fictional, exploits, they just attach him to the biggest name in piracy, Blackbeard.
So by having Redbeard kill Blackbeard,
the story instantly elevates Redbeard. It makes him better than the most famous pirate ever without needing any further proof. It's efficient storytelling, even if it completely ignores historical fact.
Blackbeard becomes just a stepping stone for Redbeard's legend.
Exactly. He's reduced to a plot device. It shows how readily historical accuracy gets thrown overboard when it gets in the way of making a more powerful, more legendary figure.
And this pattern of impossible timing, it continues, right? It gets even more tangled in his supposed final battle.
Oh, it escalates spectacularly. The story needs the highest possible authority figure involved to make Redbeard's defeat seem suitably epic.
So the notebooks claim that President Lincoln ordered the Navy to hunt him down?
Yes. The story specifically states that on, get this, February 30th, 1867, President Abraham Lincoln sent out the entire U.S. Navy to take out Redbeard.
February 30th?
February 30th, an impossible date.
Right. That date just doesn't exist. February is 28 days, 29 in a leap year, never 30.
That's the first and maybe the most blatant error. It screams fiction. It shows the author had zero concern for factual accuracy and 100% concern for drama.
Okay, error number one, impossible date. What else?
Error number two, the person giving the order. President Abraham Lincoln.
He wasn't president in 1867, was he?
No. Lincoln was assassinated in April 1865. He'd been dead for nearly 2 years by February 1867.
So why use Lincoln?
Because he's arguably the most monumental, revered, almost mythical, presidential figure of that era, especially after his martyrdom. Attaching his name, even posthumously, gives the order immense weight and significance. It makes Redbeard seem like a threat worthy of this iconic leader's personal attention, even from beyond the grave, apparently.
Wow. Okay, so impossible date, wrong president. What's the third failure?
Well, the year itself, 1867, is just wrong in the context of Lincoln being president. So the whole setup, Lincoln ordering the Navy in 1867 on February 30th, fails on every single historical point.
It's pure invention, designed to make Redbeard seem like a threat so immense it required this impossible combination of figurehead and date to even address him.
Absolutely. It solidifies him as this almost supernatural force that breaks the rules of time and governance.
And the battle itself, the sources say Lincoln sent the entire Navy.
The entire Navy, which is, again, absurd exaggeration. The U.S. Navy in 1867, just after the Civil War, was actually in a period of significant downsizing and decommissioning.
Not exactly ready to deploy its entire force against one pirate.
Not at all. And the idea of losing 150 Navy ships in this single battle.
150 ships sunk by Redbeard in one fight.
That's the claim, which would be, without question, the single greatest naval disaster in American history by an enormous margin. It would have crippled the U.S.'s ability to project power for decades.
And again, absolutely no historical record of such a catastrophe.
None whatsoever. It would have been meticulously documented, debated, analyzed. It would be in every history book. It exists only in these notebook entries. The U.S. Navy in 1867 likely didn't even have 150 ships suitable for that kind of massive, coordinated open ocean engagement, let alone lose them all to a pirate.
So the myth needs this spectacular, impossible destruction. Mm-hmm. Even in defeat, Redbeard has to inflict unbelievable damage.
He has to go down fighting like a force of nature, taking a huge chunk of the U.S. Navy with him. It justifies the legend. His ship sinks, taking him presumably to his end.
Or maybe not his end.
Right. Because this is where the story takes another turn, where the sort of historical fiction, however inaccurate, ends and the ghost story begins.
The historical impossibility forces it into the supernatural realm.
Exactly. The narrative jumps forward almost a century from that supposed battle in 1867.
The one on February 30th.
Right, that one. All the way to 1955, when an exploration crew, the story goes, located the wreckage of Redbeard's ship.
So the legend needed a sequel, and it finds it nearly 90 years later on the seabed.
And the setting becomes crucial again. These sources mention the exploration happened near where a tsunami in 1949 supposedly buried something called the Finnegan's Island Penitentiary underwater.
A sunken prison near the wreck site.
Yeah. Now, whether Finnegan's Island Penitentiary is real or part of the legend too is unclear from these notes, but the detail serves a purpose. It makes the location sound incredibly remote, deep, tragic, and forgotten.
Enhances the mystery. Shipwrecks are already kind of eerie, isolated places.
Exactly. They often become what you might call ghost stages for new folklore. Perfect settings for tales of survival, curses, or supernatural encounters. Adding a recently sunken prison nearby just amps up that atmosphere of dread and isolation. The myth borrows power from the setting's supposed tragic history.
Okay, so the dive team finds the wreck in this spooky location, and then it gets really weird, doesn't it?
It takes a hard turn into the physically impossible. The scuba team goes down, penetrates the wreck, and discovers a functional air pocket inside the ship.
An air pocket? After almost a century underwater?
Yes. Big enough, apparently, for them to take off their breathing gear and walk around inside this century-old shipwreck.
Okay, that requires a serious suspension of disbelief. How could that even happen?
Scientifically, it's incredibly implausible. A wooden or early iron hull from the 1860s, under deep-sea pressure for nearly 100 years, the structural integrity would be long gone. Wood rots, iron rusts, timbers shift, pressure crushes.
And the air itself, wouldn't it just dissolve into the water over that much time?
It absolutely should. Air, especially under pressure, dissolves in water. Over decades, that pocket should have shrunk and vanished completely. It defies physics as we understand it.
But the myth needs that air pocket, doesn't it?
It's essential for the final act. It has to exist to allow for the preservation of something much more significant than old timbers or treasure.
Something living, or at least not entirely dead.
Precisely. The narrative moves decisively from unbelievable history to outright supernatural event here. That air pocket isn't a random fluke. It's a stage deliberately set by the storyteller for the final reveal.
So the divers are inside, walking around in this impossible bubble.
Exploring this incredible time capsule, they think. And then they hear it.
What do they hear?
The sources emphasize the shock. Suddenly, they hear a door swing open nearby, followed by the sound of heavy footsteps, running towards them.
Inside a shipwreck, underwater, after 90 years.
Heavy footsteps. It's the sound of the myth itself waking up, reasserting its presence right there in the deep.
Chilling. And the sources mention finding emblems. Skulls, or a red beard symbol.
Yeah, reportedly found on the timbers, like the myth signature, confirming they're in the right place. But that's just stage dressing for the main event.
Which is the appearance of him.
Right. The footsteps approach, stop. And then, out of the gloom, inside the wreck, a figure appears. The description is specific. A very old, tall, and obviously blind pirate.
Tall. So it connects back.
Directly back. The key feature, that impossible height, the 6'12" presence, is still there, even after nearly a century underwater. The myth demands that consistency. It loops right back to the initial physical exaggeration that started the whole legend.
So he's still recognizably the giant Redbeard. Old, blind, presumably trapped there.
Trapped in time, almost. Preserved in that impossible air pocket. It's like his immense, malevolent presence was too strong for time or decay to fully touch him down there. This idea of arrested decay, or time freezing around a powerful figure, is common in folklore.
He's been waiting, and his reaction to the divers.
That's the perfect, final, chilling twist. He's seemingly unfazed by modern scuba gear, by the impossible situation, by the passage of almost 100 years. He just reacts to the sound, the presence of living beings invading his space after so long.
So when you lay it all out,
yeah,
it's fascinating how this Redbeard legend was built, isn't it?
It really is. It synthesizes all these potent elements from pirate lore, the terrifying height, the impossible kill count that sounds more like naval warfare stats, the duel with the most famous pirate name, all stitched together to create this ultimate villain.
A villain larger than life. And the errors, the anachronisms, they're not mistakes in the storytelling, they're the storytelling method.
Exactly. They're the proof that it was constructed, not recorded.
Mm.
Like you said earlier, those impossible dates and details are the fingerprints left behind by the mythmaker.
So we've tracked it from the supposed 1800s dominance.
The 6'12" giants.
Through that completely bonkers 1867 battle ordered by a dead president on a non-existent day.
Right down to that deep sea discovery in 1955.
And at every step, the story chose dramatic impact over factual accuracy. Every single time.
It really is a prime example of how myths can be created to fulfill a kind of collective desire, maybe, for an ultimate villain. Someone so powerful, so transgressive, that they literally break the rules of history and physics.
It reminds me a bit of what you said about Lu Wang, where the weapon was the witness. Here, the impossibilities themselves are the witnesses, right?
Precisely. The anachronisms testify not to the events, but to the construction of the story. Choosing Lincoln, choosing February 30th. Those aren't errors. Those are deliberate choices to maximize the legendary status of Redbeard.
And maybe the lack of any real historical trace just makes the story stronger. Like with Klaus Richter, the erased soldier we talked about. If there's no record, there's nothing to contradict the myth.
It can certainly help the myth endure. It exists purely in that narrative space, untouchable by historical debunking because it never claimed to be truly historical in the first place, despite wearing history's clothes. Its power comes from its unbelievability.
So for you, the listener, what's the takeaway here?
Well, I think the Redbeard story is a perfect case study. It shows how myths use these markers, the impossible dates, the historical mismatches, not as flaws, but as proof of their own nature. Identifying them helps us understand the story's real purpose, not to record history, but to inspire awe, fear, maybe even a thrill.
But that final image, it really sticks with you, doesn't it?
It's unforgettable. The scuba team, deep down in the crushing dark.
That impossible bubble of air holding back the ocean, holding back time.
And then that sound echoing in the confined space.
Yeah.
Heavy footsteps coming closer.
A door swings open. Heavy footsteps. There he is. Tall, ancient, blind, preserved by the deep and the legend itself.
And he turns towards the sound of these intruders after nearly a century of silence.
And he says, finally, some action.
Chilling. An air pocket, a swinging door, a voice that shouldn't exist. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? After all that time waiting in the dark, what kind of action was that centuries-old pirate actually expecting?